Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And I'm going to ask you to hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Dr. Mark Geyer and David Geyer, his son, and we're going to be talking about thimerosal and vaccines. We're going to be talking about CDC and their data bank that they had. We're going to be talking about an intentional cover-up of a very, very serious problem in America. You see, it is estimated that one out of every six American children has either a neurodevelopmental abnormality and or a behavioral abnormality, and this is a marked increase over the last years. And, well, I'm going to let Dr. Geyer tell you a lot more about that because he's closer to the subject. But the question is, why have these things happened? And I think as the evening unfolds, you're going to get an entirely different picture of what's happening behind the scenes. And I hope that by the time the evening is over, you will realize that you can't necessarily always believe what the experts tell us, because sometimes there is another agenda there. So, Dr. Geyer, Dr. Mark Geyer, how are you tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. And David Geyer, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
And David, of course, is research. Are you working for a PhD, or where are you going, David?
At George Washington University in the graduate program.
Can you speak a little louder, please?
I'm in the graduate program at George Washington University in biochemistry.
All right, fine. And are you going to get a PhD, or what are you going to do?
I haven't really decided yet.
All right. Anyway, of course, David helps his dad as they're doing a lot of research. And how did Dr. Mark Geyer, how did you actually get into this? You're actually a geneticist, aren't you?
Yes, I'm an MD, PhD, and I worked at NIH for 10 years, and I did a lot of vaccine work way back there in the 70s, and then I went on to be a professor at Johns Hopkins, and I've continued to work on vaccine issues for the last 30-plus years.
And so you really believe that vaccines are a great thing, if they're done properly?
Yes, I believe that appropriately safe and efficacious vaccines are a very good thing for society, but I believe the mismanagement that has been happening is unbelievable. And we have a news flash.
All right.
And the news flash is, and it's on MSN.com, that the United States has just sent out thousands of vials of potentially deadly influenza vaccine to labs in the United States and around the world as part of a test kit. And they now are trying to recall them because if one of those vials gets out, we're going to start a worldwide pandemic.
Now, why?
The malfeasance that has been going on in our government.
Now, why would anybody in their right mind send vials of a deadly disease? Apparently, this is related to a horrible disease, but what was it, the 57 or is it the 1918?
Yeah, this is the 57 one they sent out. And they're just so incompetent that they have a test kit where they use to calibrate the labs, and they're supposed to send out harmless influenza, and they've now sent out, I think it's 5,000 or something vials with a very deadly strain, and some of them aren't even in the United States. So talk about terrorism, talk about knowing what they're doing. The risk is enormous. They're trying to get now on the phone and get these people to destroy the vials before they open them. But this is just typical of the kind of malfeasance that we've been seeing in the vaccine program in the United States. Vaccines are good. People that run them like this are not good.
All right, we're going to be back in just a few minutes here with more of this incredible story. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Dr. Mark Geyer, David Geyer. Now, let's get a little bit of the background. Why would, first of all, they make up 5,000 vials of a deadly virus?
I have no explanation for that, nor do they. They said it was a mistake.
It was a mistake to make them. It was a mistake to send them out. But if anything happens, oh, shucks. Well, it's sort of like so often what the government does. Why, we never intended that for it to happen. Well, anyway, but be that as it may, I think just hope and pray that they can get these before we suddenly do have a worldwide pandemic.
You know, I've been worrying about the another thing that they have done, but it was just theoretical. Now you can see my worry is real. If someone dug up in the last couple of years from the permafrost in Alaska some people who died of the 1918-1919 flu, which was the most deadly epidemic in history of mankind, that killed something like 40 or 50 million people. And they've been working with that virus, and, you know, I would never condone digging up a deadly virus like that to work in labs, because I've seen accidents happen, but that was just theoretical. Now, they didn't send that one out, but they sent out the second most deadly virus of the last century as a calibration tool by mistake. And as they say on their own website, if one of the lab workers catches this, they could start a worldwide pandemic that would never have happened. This is almost like one of those science fiction movies.
It's sort of like Rainbow Six, which, of course, a wonderful, wonderful story by Tom Clancy. And if our listeners haven't heard Rainbow Six or read Rainbow Six, I suggest you get it. We may be almost seeing that same thing happen here. Well, now, let's get really into what the background of course, you're concerned over thimerosal. And certainly you've suspected for a long time that there was a relationship between thimerosal, which is what would you call it, not an antiseptic, but something that's added to vaccines so that they'll be sterile.
They're calling it a preservative. Or a sterilizing agent.
All right. And so they've added this to our vaccines for, what, 30, 40 years?
On a limited basis, it's been added to some of our vaccines for 30 or 40 years. It's only in the last 15 or 20 years that the level has gone up to levels that are many, many fold in excess of the EPA safety guidelines. And just to be clear, thimerosal is mercury. It's organic mercury. For your listeners, probably the easiest thing to compare it to is like the methyl mercury. Methyl mercury is in fish, and people all across the country have been warned, if you're a pregnant woman, if you're an infant, you're not supposed to be exposed to methyl mercury, because it can cause very, very serious neurological damage.
Hold that thought for just a moment when our stations join us again. Well, Dr. Stan, and while, of course, we were off the air, Dr. Geyer was sharing with me the fact that the CDC, for somebody, for some strange reason, made up 5,000 vials of the second most deadly influenza virus ever known, and then accidentally, for some unknown reason, sent them out all over the world, and now they're frantically trying to get them back again, saying, my goodness, if anybody got a case of this, influenza could start an epidemic that would sweep the world with frightening implications. But, of course, this is all accidental, we want you to know. Now, I just heard a vague reference to that on the news today. That's up on the CDC website, and have the major media picked up the story besides MSNBC?
I think it's being picked up everywhere, but it's just an amazing. I mean, there are mistakes made. Everybody makes mistakes. This mistake, you don't make.
All right, fine. And
this is an amazing mistake. And you know, in this day and age of terrorism, you know, we're trying to keep the terrorists. I mean, in addition to some a laboratory person accidentally being exposed and spreading it, all that has to happen is one of the terrorists steals one of those vials, and they can start an epidemic that will make 911 look like a joke.
Well, I think that it's something we all have to be very, very concerned about. And, you know, we certainly the most important thing we can do right now is try to get our own immune system in the best possible shape and realize if this thing does come down the line, there's going to be a terrible problem. Do they have some sort of a vaccine for us already in case this should happen?
Nope. This is not the strain they were making the vaccine for. What I could say is that there is a drug that stops it. Tamiflu would stop it. It stops the 1918 and this virus, but I don't know that there's enough doses of Tamiflu in the world currently to protect everybody, but that's the one drug that will stop influenza cold.
Now, how many pills do you have to take? How many a day and over how long a period?
Well, it depends on the attack. I mean, if it was a terrorist attack, no one knows what the dose would be, but the standard dose of Tamiflu, it's used two different ways. One is one pill a day during the time of exposure gives you 90-some percent protection, and the second way is if you catch a virus, influenza, you take two pills a day for 5 days, and that makes the... You have to start right away, though, in the first couple of days. That makes the attack much, much more mild.
Right. All right, fine. So certainly this is something that should be done. I understand that Great Britain has begun, of course, stockpiling Tamiflu. I don't think... Are we doing that at all?
I'd heard that we are because they were afraid of the bird flu. Tamiflu also stops the bird flu. I hope they have enough doses here that if an epidemic begins, they'll at least be able to use it in circle containment or something like that. But I would have... if you asked me this yesterday, and I have some problems with the CDC and the FDA, I would have never believed this could have happened. But today, it happened.
Well, if you listen to our programs, we've been talking, not something like this, but we've been pointing out to our listeners out across America for at least a month that there seem to be these recurrent articles day after day after day after day, all pointing to the imminence of some sort of a international influenza epidemic. And whether it be starting over in Asia from the bird flu, or perhaps in Korea with some sort of a new virus there, or the president announcing he's setting in, making up new regulations as far as enforcing quarantine. But day after day after day, and I simply pointed out to my listeners, and I'm sure some of you out there may remember hearing it, that they're focusing our attention on the threat of an influenza epidemic for some reason. Didn't know what it was, but for some reason they're focusing our fear, our concern. Well, maybe this is the explanation, because obviously it's too well coordinated through every means of communication, week in, week out, month in, month out. So anyway, let's get back now to something that we can certainly talk a little bit about, the past history, and that would be the use of thimerosal, which is an ethylmercury product in our vaccine. So why don't you pick up this story, because you're certainly one of the world-leading experts on the use of thimerosal and its impact on our children.
Well, as David was saying, in 1991, approximately, or 90, the United States added to the standard childhood vaccination program, which was DTP, 4 to 5 shots, we added hepatitis B and HIV, which is Haemophilus influenza B. And when we did that, those diseases are probably worth protecting against, but each one had mercury in it, had thimerosal, and at that point, the epidemic of neurological disorders and autism went right through the roof, and it became a very, very large epidemic, one of the most costly, probably the most costly epidemics in history, with hundreds of thousands to maybe even millions of children affected. And the National Immunization Program of the CDC spent a good deal of time trying to cover it up. And since the last time I've been on your program, something has very, very important has happened in that field, and that is that the National Immunization Program of the CDC has been fired. This was announced in the New York Times. Basically, what happened is, in 2004, they had a phony IOM that concluded that there was no association.
Now, for our listeners, IOM is the Institute of Medicine, isn't it?
Yes, right.
Okay, go ahead.
That's a group that's supposed to advise the U.S. government. But in 2005, they had another Institute of Medicine report, and this Institute of Medicine report said that the National Immunization Program of the CDC had manipulated and hidden data and criticized them very much for what they had said, and that came out on a Thursday. The very next day, there was a meeting with Julie Gabberding, who's the head of the CDC, and she fired the entire group. That is, the head of the group, Dr. Chen, was stripped of his title. He no longer works on vaccines, and the National Immunization Program, which had been in charge of vaccine safety for the last 30 years, is no longer in charge of vaccine safety. They're only in charge of vaccine promotion. So now they go around saying, take the vaccine, take the vaccine, take the vaccine, but they're not in charge of safety. And the safety was moved directly under Dr. Gabberding's office. This is an unbelievable happening, because it's an admission that they have been fooling people and that they've been trying to cover this up. And, I've been yelling and screaming that they've been incompetent, and the U.S. Congress found them guilty of institutional malfeasance, but I never really thought they would actually fire them all, although believe me, I'm not unhappy about the idea.
No one, of course. When did this actually happen? I remember when we talked earlier, you mentioned it, and I've been, of course, read the New York Times every day. I didn't see the article. About how long ago?
It's about a month ago.
All right.
Actually, maybe a month and a half ago. It was, for people who read the New York Times, it probably was a rather cryptic article. It mentioned that the CDC was shuffling vaccine safety concerns out of the National Immunization Program, and Julie Gerberding was taking personal control over it. And they also mentioned in the article that the CDC was going to follow recommendations made by the Institute of Medicine.
All right, so basically, if you didn't know the background of what would happen, why, you really wouldn't be able to understand what had happened then.
I think that's correct.
You know, because the problem is that the average person reading that in the New York Times would have no idea. But, of course, I read the weekend edition of the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the San Jose Mercury, my local newspaper, and a number of news magazines, and I haven't seen any mention of that. So it either went by me, because you have to sort of skim read when you do that, or it certainly hasn't gotten a large play. But the implication that the people in the CDC have been deceiving the American people for a period of years as far as vaccine safety is a rather frightening implication. Now, you have actually had the opportunity to actually get into the CDC databank, databank that they didn't want anybody to see. Would you like to get into the background of that?
Yeah, well, in fact, beyond that, we've now, within the last few days, published an article summarizing some of the data from that databank, which in our hands shows the same effect that we saw in all the other databanks, which is that there's a strong association between the amount of thimerosal that a child receives and his risk of having autism or neurodevelopmental disorders.
Now, what is the statistical significance? What was it, the incidence? Was it twice the incidence of autism if you got the thimerosal-containing vaccines, or what?
What we see is, when we do our studies, unfortunately, we can't fully evaluate the risk that thimerosal poses. What we're able to do is get snapshots and little snippets of data. And the way that we get that data is that, just as an example, we compare children that got thimerosal-containing DTaP vaccine, which was in 4 or 5 doses, versus thimerosal-free DTaP vaccine, 4 or 5 doses again. And these children were vaccinated in the same vaccine schedule over the same years. And what we're able to see is that those that got the thimerosal-containing DTaP vaccine 4 or 5 times, so they got an additional 100 or 125 micrograms of mercury, are at 2 to 6 times, depending upon whether it's autism or mental retardation. Each one has slightly different risk, increased risk of developing those conditions. And it's, of course, statistically significant, which means that by chance you wouldn't expect to see that much difference between the two groups. And in the VSD, we were actually able to expand it even beyond to more kind of detailed analysis, where we looked at things like there are things called ICD-9 codes, and what those are is when you go to your doctor and you have a condition, your doctor diagnoses you with an ICD-9 code. So we could get much more specific in what the adverse outcomes we were looking at. And so we see that there's a broad-based, basically, neurological disability in children that occurs at a much higher frequency when children get much more mercury from their vaccines.
Now, where was this actually published? You'd sent me, emailed me an article in which I'd read with great interest, but, of course, the one you sent me was not the one you're talking about, is it?
Well, we've had 2 published fairly recently. The most recent was in the Medical Science Monitor.
All right. Is that the one you're speaking of?
Yes.
All right, fine. All right, well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Geyer and David Geyer. And, of course, when you stop and think, we're talking about 2 to 6 times the increase of mental disorder, autism, and the other neurodevelopmental abnormalities. This is one of the great tragedies of all time. But, of course, you're not going to see most of this on the front pages of your local newspaper. But the implications are there. If you wanted to destroy a great nation, well, maybe it was just an accident, but we'll be back in just a moment here. We Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is David and Mark Geyer. We're talking about, of course, what they found in their studies. Was this based upon the CDC data bank? Was this based upon other data banks?
This is the data I'm referring to, or we're referring to, comes from the CDC's own database. It's called the Vaccine Safety Data Link, or VSD is the acronym. That database has the complete medical records on children. So this database involves no reporting. It's just simply there were children in a HMO, and they're primarily actually on the West Coast, that went in and in sort of a random fashion received vaccines that had varying amounts of thimerosal, ranging from 25 micrograms a dose versus other ones that had zero. And then we asked the question, based on that exposure in the first 6 months of life, what was those children's eventual risk of developing neurodevelopmental disorders? And what we saw was that the more mercury they got from these childhood vaccines, the more risk they had of subsequently developing autism, mental retardation, attention deficit disorder, a whole host of these kinds of conditions.
And this would be learning disabilities, reading disabilities, cognitive disabilities of all sorts.
Yeah.
Now, you know, but didn't the people in the CDC vaccine safety department have access to this information all along?
Yes, they did have access to it. And what's very disturbing is that we have their internal memos that we obtained under Freedom of Information Act, where we see that in their first assessments of this VSD database, they saw, just like what we're seeing, that there was a tremendous effect of the mercury in the vaccines on these neurological disorders. And then we see in their emails and in special secret meetings that they had that they talked about how they were going to manipulate the data to make the effect disappear.
In other words, what they were going to do was conceal the truth from the American people.
And that's what they were criticized by the Institute of Medicine for, inappropriately manipulating and hiding data. And that's really the reason why they were fired.
And they justify it, I think, in their mind, having read these memos. They feel that the American people in general can't handle the idea that these vaccines may have risk. That in order to preserve the vaccine program, it's mandatory that they cover over safety concerns with vaccines, because if there's some doubt about the safety of vaccines in the public's mind, then they might not take the vaccine. And the way in which the National Immunization Program is funded is that their number one charge is to promote uptake of vaccine. If the amount of vaccine given in the United States slightly falls, they actually receive less money and less ability to do their work.
Well, were they concerned about the fact that one in six American children has either a autistic defect or a neurodevelopmental defect or behavior disorder? Were they concerned about the children whose lives were being destroyed because of the mercury, or was it all about the funding?
They don't care about the safety of the children. What they care about is vaccine uptake. They care about public confidence in the vaccine program. They care about lawsuits against the vaccine manufacturers, because if there are a lot of lawsuits, then the companies might not make the vaccine, and so CDC won't be able to give the vaccines that they need. They virtually never, in any of these internal memos, have a discussion about, well, what is this going to do to the children? There's only, in the whole record that we've looked at, and it's literally thousands
of them. Hold that thought right there for a moment. Our stations are coming on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dr. Mark Geyer and David Geyer, and basically they have access to the data bank of the CDC, the same data bank that the people in the vaccine safety department of the CDC had. Not only they had access to the data bank, they were able to, under the Freedom of Information Act, to get access to their internal memos and their various things and the minutes of their meetings. And the whole theme there within the meetings was, well, we can't let the American people know the truth. We can't let them know this. They wouldn't continue taking the vaccines. They were concerned that one in six American children have been seriously injured by this. They were concerned about the vaccine manufacturers. They were concerned about the lawsuits. They were concerned that the people might learn the truth. Would that be a fairly good appraisal?
Yeah, I think so. And so, as I was saying, there's only one exception in all the records to this kind of norm. At a secret meeting in 2000 at a place called Simpsonwood, where CDC and the vaccine manufacturers actually held a closed-door meeting, where they kept a transcript of this. They talked in detail about all of the harmful effects CDC was finding from thimerosal. At this conference, one person, his name's Dr. Richard Johnston, actually got up, and the only time ever in all these records, he said that I've seen enough, I don't want my own grandchild to get thimerosal-containing vaccines until thimerosal has been completely removed from the vaccines. That is the only time that anybody ever advocated, well, let's do something to protect children. At least somebody was saved. And at this meeting, they go on to describe, well, nobody can ever know all the harmful data that we've seen from thimerosal. They specifically say that in the transcript. And they mention about, like I said, they're in a bad position from defending lawsuits. They mention, one of them says that they're very saddened by the fact that this study was done at all to show that thimerosal was causing harm, because the outcome of it could have already been predicted. And now they've reached this point where they're left hanging, and how they deal with it from here is extremely problematic. These meetings are just unreal. Do you think these people aren't human beings?
Well, I suspect that some of them have an entirely different worldview, and I think that's the hardest thing that I finally had to come to accept, and that the message I try to get to our listeners. There's some people who look at the world entirely differently, and they're unconcerned about human suffering. When you understand that, then why you understand what's going on, but even more than that, you can understand the vaccine problem that we've really faced in America with the thimerosal. And they left that in, of course, in the childhood vaccines, even knowing the harm it was doing until they sort of ran out of the vaccines. And then, of course, they left it in the influenza vaccine, and then this last year where they were telling every parent, if you love your child, you know, and they're 6 months of age of old, take them down and get their thimerosal shot. I mean, the influenza vaccination. So, now, when did the Institute of Medicine come out with their report? This is the most recent report of the IOM?
In February of 2005.
Okay.
There's been some more interesting things happen, that even despite what you said, which is true, in 1999 they did start to remove it from some of the vaccines. So the level of thimerosal went up in 1991, and it started to go down in 1999. And we just got word now from California that the rate of new cases of autism is falling during the time when they started going back down. And we've also seen that in some of our databases. So exactly at the time when they went up, the rates went up, and when they went down, the rates went down.
And, of course, the tragedy is that the average American is not getting this story. Now, there's a new book out. It's called Evidence of Harm. Does that book cover any of what you're covering?
That book really documents exactly what we're saying. It provides in-depth review, again, of internal materials obtained from CDC, and really illustrates in great detail both what CDC did to try to hide the effects of thimerosal from the public. It also talks in great detail about the political aspects. It turns out that thimerosal, because it did so much damage to so many people, has entered the political arena. People like Senator Bill Frist has on numerous occasions introduced riders onto various bills designed to limit the ability of parents whose children have been damaged by thimerosal to seek legal recourse from vaccine manufacturers and Eli Lilly, who developed thimerosal.
In other words, his really loyalty is not to the people, not to the patients, not to the victims, but to the people who make these large donations to politicians. And Eli Lilly has certainly been a major supporter of the current administration. They may support both political parties, I don't know, but, you know, that is unconscionable. Why would a physician who is supposedly dedicated to helping humanity be trying to protect the vaccine manufacturers, and specifically the people who, of course, develop and, of course, have been making a tremendous amount of money disseminating the thimerosal? We're going to be back in just a moment or two here with Dr. Mark Geyer and with David Geyer. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess two special guests this evening, and we're talking about really something that is very, very close to my heart, which I, of course, I never gave vaccines, but I know that so many people have had the tragedy of having a child who's autistic, and with one in every 166 children in America autistic today, the whole family is destroyed. Many times they end up in divorce. If they don't end up in divorce, their whole life is centered around taking care of this unfortunate child. And of course, one of the most unconscionable parts of this is a series of articles in all of the major news magazines and all of the major newspapers, and covered on all the television networks, almost as if somebody had given an order, somebody had pulled a switch, but they were all talking about the tragedy of autism, and the one thing they were stressing is, well, certainly don't try to get this thing treated. You know, certainly those people tell you that it's related to the mercury, but oh my goodness, the treatment for the mercury, the effort to detoxify your child could hurt their kidney or their livers or... Well, I've talked to enough people, you know, who treat these children, who tell me they get miraculous results from treating many of them, especially if they can get them early. And everything was done in that series of articles to discourage parents from getting treatment. Did you run into that?
Yes, I think that's a part of it. And interestingly, in addition to the two papers that we just mentioned that we have, we also have a paper out now in Medical Hypothesis, which talks about a new treatment method. And it involves removing mercury, but it also involves another observation that we've made, which is that autism affects males far more than females. 4-to-1 or 5-to-1, and severe autism is even 20-to-1. And also, of course, in mercury spills and accidents, it's been observed that males are more sensitive than females. So we started looking into the association between mercury and testosterone and maleness, and we've found a treatment method that attacks the testosterone level and makes the ability to remove mercury much better than simple chelation. And our first child that we tried it on about 100 days ago was a child who was almost 9 years old, who had not a single word. He couldn't say mama when we started this treatment. In 100 days now, he, as of a couple of days ago, now not only speaking and interacting with his peers, but he's begun to read and write. This kind of thing, and now we have several other children that are on this trial. This kind of thing can be done, and it can help a lot of these children, but you can only do this if you understand that there's a mercury problem, and the mercury problem came from the vaccines. And interestingly, a lot of these children, in addition to having autism, have various forms of precocious puberty. They have high testosterone levels, and it's so bad that there's a study now out of the NIH.
Hold that thought for just a moment here as we bring our guests right back on our station. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just covering something fantastic. Would you mind sort of picking up on what you were, just repeat what you were saying, because although our internet and our local audience heard that, the affiliate stations across America and the shortwave audience didn't hear what you were saying, so please repeat that. It deserves to be repeated several times. Basically, we were talking about the recent programs, a recent, I would say, almost like a propaganda effort by all the major television networks and all the major news magazines and all the major newspapers. And, you know, and it was talking about autism and the terrible tragedy of autism, but shucks, nobody has any idea what it's all about. And, of course, none of the treatments worked. Well, what you want is a speech therapist, but they're doing everything they could to discourage parents from getting their children into treatment early and, of course, getting the mercury out of their systems. Somebody obviously knew that this information was a direct relationship between thimerosal and mercury and autism and the neurodevelopmental abnormalities, and everything was done to discourage treatment. Well, please pick up this story there. That was David that was telling us about that?
No, it was actually Mark.
Okay, Mark, go ahead. Would you please repeat what you said? Sometimes repetition is good, and besides that, I want all of our listeners to hear it.
Our research, because we were researching mercury, led us to discover that there's an association between maleness and sensitivity to mercury and high testosterone levels, and we've come up with a treatment that involves not only removing mercury, but lowering testosterone levels. And we found that a good percentage of the children who are affected actually have precocious puberty. And the U.S. rate of precocious puberty in males who don't have autism is 1 in 10,000. There already have been publications that say that the autistics and the neurodevelopmentally affected children have a 20-fold higher rate of precocious puberty. We think it's hundreds of fold higher, and we started treating some children by lowering their testosterone, and we've had some absolutely remarkable results. But interestingly, we've affected so many children that there's an article out on the age at which the average person goes through puberty, and you probably have heard that in between 1900, say, and 1960, the average age went way down, and that was felt to be due to better nutrition and better health, and that's probably true. Between the 60s and, say, 1990, the level stayed constant because, you know, our health didn't change very much, and our nutrition maybe got worse. But about 10 years ago, just about the time that the thimerosal went up in the vaccines, again, the rate of the age at which puberty occurs in the United States, the average age, started to go down drastically. Interestingly,
yeah, no, but for our listeners, that means, of course, that the girls would go through menarche and boys would go through into adolescence at a much lower age, a much younger age, right?
That's right. And interestingly, they studied the Scandinavian countries, and they did not have a change. Now, the Scandinavian countries outlawed thimerosal in the early 90s. The United States didn't. We've actually changed the mercury has affected the testosterone levels in such a way that we've actually made people go through puberty earlier. But it also gave us a new window into treatment modality. And by lowering the testosterone, we're able to remove the mercury more effectively than you can by simply doing chelation. We're very excited about the possibility that this may help a lot of children.
Well, you were talking off air about the 9-year-old boy who couldn't even say mother. You want to tell that story? And really, what happened when you started treating him?
We chose, you know, for our first patient, someone who was very severely affected, who had not a single word. He could not say mama. He could not hold a pencil. He couldn't sit on a swing. He couldn't obey directions. He couldn't identify his body parts. And he had severe, as most of these children do, severe intestinal problems. Within 100 days of treatment, he's now verbal. His intestinal problems have completely cleared. And as of about a few days ago, he started to read and write. And in fact, now he's reading avidly. They had these cards that he reads, and now he can read them all, and they can't write the cards fast enough. This is an amazing improvement of a child that was... Everybody tried every other therapy possible. I mean, he had speech therapists, he had, occupational therapists, he had physical therapists. Nobody could get anywhere with him. And then within 100 days of this therapy, which involved lowering his testosterone and then removing the mercury, we've had a massive improvement. And we've now started several other children who have also started to show a big-time improvement.
Well,
so we have hope that maybe we can recover some of these children that we've damaged.
Well, now, how are you getting rid of the mercury? Are you doing intravenous chelation? Are you doing oral chelation? Are you doing a transdermal chelation to get rid of the mercury?
What we've been doing is initially starting with transdermal DMPS.
Remember, you're talking to a general audience out here. So transdermal means it's some sort of a cream on the skin. And what is this? This actually tends to draw the mercury out?
Yeah, what happens is you apply it to the skin. DMPS among chelators used in humans is a pretty strong one. The idea is that it goes through the skin into the blood and circulates around, and what it will do is bind up any deposits of mercury, like found in tissues in the brain. And what happens is when it binds it up, the mercury chelator complex is eliminated out in the feces, out in the urine, and you can actually measure it over time in both of those, in both urine and fecal material.
And so these children then begin excreting the mercury. They're getting it out of their system, and of course they're getting it out of their brains, and they really begin to come back like.
But a number of people have done that. But what our improvement was,
right,
that we used a drug to lower the testosterone level. Very, very low before we do this, because the mercury binds to the testosterone, and also as the mercury starts to come out, you get terrible reactions if there's testosterone around. So we've improved the standard chelation methodology by using mainline, and incidentally, the drug we use is the standard treatment for precocious puberty. So these kids have precocious puberty. We treat them for precocious puberty, which is what, you know, mainline medicine, which is really what we're part of, would do. And, of course, in addition, it frees up the mercury, and we not only stop their precocious puberty, but we're able to improve their mentation greatly.
Well, you know, I've done a number of interviews recently with people who are full-time into treating patients with autism, and almost in each instance why, it's a physician who's had children that became autistic, and up to that time they didn't even give the thing a thought, and then suddenly when it's their own children, and one of them was an obstetrician who has two children that are severely autistic, and so she's given up her obstetrical practice entirely and spends full time teaching these or treating the autistic children. And I'm sure you'll be in touch with the Autism Institute here in California once you have enough information and that can be shared with these people. There are only a limited number of doctors who are really doing this full time. And of course, they're sort of looked down upon by their fellow physicians because it's sort of quackery to treat these children. After all, there's nothing that can be done for them. But there's a great deal that can be done for them, isn't there?
There's a long history of this. That people who don't understand mainline medicine when they didn't understand an illness think it's psychiatric. The classical one was syphilis. They used to do psychoanalysis for syphilis. After all, syphilis involves sex and it involves mental problems. And of course, we now know it's infectious. Then they used to send to the psychiatrist people that had asthma. They were supposed to be crying out for their mothers, and we now know that that's a medical problem, not a psychiatric problem. They used to send people who had ulcers for psychiatric, and now we know that that's an infectious disease. And the same thing is happening here. They're sending these kids to a psychologist or a psychiatrist as if, you know, well, their mother, they didn't have a good relationship with their mother or something like that. These kids are sick. There's no question they're medically sick. If you run a laboratory test, you can see that they're mercury toxic. They have, terrible GI problems. And the mainline medicine was just ignoring them, and so there have been a number of people who've tried empirically to get some cures, and they've helped some of the kids. But I think that we now have put them all together. All the therapies that we've seen used have one thing in common. They all lower testosterone. Some people use secretin. It turns out secretin affects the pituitary axis and lowers testosterone. Some people remove mercury, and actually that lowers testosterone. Some people work on the glutathione pathway, and that lowers testosterone. And then some people use Ritalin, which is the mainline medicine, and nobody knows why that helps some kids. It does help some. And you know why it helps some? Because Ritalin lowers testosterone. All of these things lower testosterone. So what we did is we brought up a mainline drug, and in fact we've now just come back from the factory that makes the drug, and we're hoping to get some support because it's going to be very good for their business if that drug gets used. And we directly inhibit the testosterone, and now we get a tremendous response, and we think we can help the vast majority of these kids in a big-time way.
Well, that's really one of the most exciting things I've heard in a long time. And, of course, really this is sort of on the cutting edge, isn't it, really? This is not something that has been really discussed very widely because I've talked to all sorts of three or four doctors who are treating this, and none of them, of course, have access to the information that you're putting out tonight.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we're just doing it on a handful right now in a very small trial, but we did present to the DAN doctors, which is the Feed Autism Now doctors, the beginnings of this idea last year in California, but we hadn't treated anybody. We just published the whole idea of how it worked in Medical Hypothesis, but now we've actually tried it, and it works even better than the hypothesis does, and we're going to try to bring this to more kids. The sad thing is that if it really works as well as we think it does, we're sitting on a ticking time bomb. And the time bomb is this epidemic began in about 91. So the oldest children are, let's say, 13 or 14. They're starting to go into puberty. Once they go into puberty, the testosterone levels go very high, and these kids become totally unmanageable. So we need to get to treat. And we're talking about potentially hundreds of thousands to millions of kids. And, you know, the effort to do this, you'd have to have as many treatment centers as we have McDonald's. You'd have to have a level like the Moon program. And, of course, it's worth it if it really is working because, you know, we've done so much damage to these kids. We owe it to them. And also, it'll help bring back our economy that we've damaged. But mainline medicine is reticent to do this, although the worm is turning. I mean, that they fired the CDC. Imus in the morning is now talking on nationwide television about this problem with congresspeople. The Kirby's book is now out. The things are turning, but the question is big-time money, like from the NIH, going to be spent in this kind of treatment? And the problem is that if you treat mercury, I mean, we don't need to place the blame. I want to help the kids first. We can place the blame later, but you cannot do this kind of treatment without admitting that it's mercury, and if you admit it's mercury, then somebody has a real big problem, and they want to stay away from that. So up until now, NIH has removed funds from anybody who's looked at mercury. That has included Maddie Horney at Columbia, who showed that in a mouse model system she could cause autism. It's included Jill James, who works now at the University of Arkansas. And it also includes Boyd Haley at the University of Kentucky. Everybody who looks at mercury gets their funds removed because they don't want, the government doesn't want to be embarrassed. But forget about the embarrassment. We got to help these kids. So big time money has to be put into this, regardless of the fact that the treatment shows that, you know, what the cause is.
Well, I think that, this is really one of the great tragedies. And as they were saying, we've injured millions of American children. Now, they're not using the thimerosal over in Europe, are they?
Many
countries over there have thimerosal in their vaccines.
It's interesting. The group at the National Immunization Program, CDC, is acting like only junk scientists and charlatans believe this. But they forgot to include, first of all, good old California has made it illegal. Used by Marisol.
That's the one thing that Arnold Schwarzenegger has done that I really applaud him for.
Iowa's made it illegal, and as of last August, the BBC reported that England was going to make it illegal because they thought it was causing autism, and by September, it became illegal in England. It's illegal in France, it's illegal in Scandinavia, it's illegal in Canada. So we're way behind the ball, the movement. In fact, there is a national bill here. I don't know with Frisk in the Senate that it's going to pass, but in the meantime, other states, I think that last count there were something like 27 states in the United States that had bills at various states of being considered. In fact, I think yesterday Florida passed unanimously, their Senate passed the bill. Now again, some of these get blocked by one person, with like a filibuster kind of movement who, really owes allegiance to the drug companies. But I've never seen a single state where there was a vote taken where it was voted down. The only way they get blocked is if they use some kind of parliamentary trick. And I think eventually, if the federal government doesn't make it illegal, the states will.
Well, of course, the implications as far as Eli Lilly are overwhelming because they've known for a long, long time how toxic this is, doesn't it? Do they have any studies that show it's safe? And aren't there really a thousand studies that show it's not safe? We're talking about the scientific studies. What is the background as far as the safety studies on thimerosal?
Well, the original safety study that was conducted on thimerosal was conducted by Eli Lilly, who developed and patented thimerosal. And what they did was, back in 1929, they tried it on 22 people who had bacterial meningitis. All of those people died within the maximum follow-up was 60 days, and they said, well, they didn't die due to the thimerosal. So they really, it never has been tested on healthy human volunteers. What's happened is, in the clinical experience of using thimerosal in vaccines, in skin ointments, and so on, is that authors have seen that thimerosal has been toxic. It causes damage to the brain, kidneys, all kinds of organs in the body.
Now, these are all scientific studies.
Yeah, these are scientific studies dating from the 40s and 50s, peer-reviewed, that are saying it's toxic and basically questioning, why do we use a compound like this in medicine? And they've had difficulty sort of reaching a consensus because everybody goes back and looks at the original trial by Eli Lilly, and the authors who published that study, even though they really couldn't demonstrate that it was safe, reached the conclusion that thimerosal had a very low order of toxicity in man, which is very suspect since these people were so sick and they were followed up for, in most cases, just a matter of days. You really couldn't see any chronic damage. And like I said, people for many decades have been recommending we've got to get this out of medicine. And actually,
your listeners can verify this for themselves if they simply go on the web and go to PubMed, which is the NIH's medical library site, and type in the word thimerosal or methylate, and you will get hundreds of articles dating You know, all the way back to, as David said, it's well, far, Medline only goes back to 1967. You have to go manually before that. And you'll get articles, peer-reviewed articles, from virtually every journal, every major journal, and from every area of specialty. You'll get dermatologists saying it should be removed. You'll get cell biologists saying it should be removed. You'll get immunologists saying it should be removed. It's an amazing number of articles that say that thimerosal should be removed. It's harmful, and it's amazing that it's still in some vaccines today. And, of course, in 1999, the CDC and the U.S. Public Health Service asked but did not require that it be removed. And here we are 6 years later, and it's still in some of the childhood vaccines.
Well, I thought they'd supposedly taken that out. They really haven't?
Well, it's not. It certainly hasn't been taken out of the influenza vaccine, which is given to all children now.
We're going to just hold that thought. We're going to be take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Mark and David Geyer. And this is really an amazing, amazing story, ladies and gentlemen. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, as Dr. Geyer was saying, it's amazing that this hasn't been taken out years ago, because all of these studies, and what are we talking about, 500 studies, 1,000 studies, do we have any idea how many there are?
We actually added up close to 5,000 studies, actually.
5,000 studies saying it should be taken out. One study that where everybody died saying it was perfectly safe. Well, there have been congressional hearings on this. What happened at the congressional hearings when this was brought out, and how did the people who produced thimerosal defend their position?
Well, the congressional hearing was conducted, a three-year hearing was conducted, and in the House of Representatives, in the Health and Wellness Division of the Government Reform Committee, they issued a report called Mercury in Medicine Taking Unnecessary Risks, where they went over in great detail in industry's internal documents on thimerosal. They went over what CDC and FDA had found out about thimerosal. And what they concluded, basically, was that thimerosal has never been tested properly in humans, that thimerosal appears to be the cause of the autism epidemic in the United States, and that the FDA was asleep at the switch, that's actually from one of their own memos, their term, regarding the rapid rise of human exposure to thimerosal in childhood vaccines. And they concluded that our health agencies were guilty of institutional malfeasance for self-protectionism and misplaced protectionism of the pharmaceutical industry.
And but nothing happened. In other words, nothing really changed.
Well, but what's happened beyond that now, there actually has been quite a bit of development. The president's Office of Special Counsel has written sort of a report on thimerosal in May, actually before that, the beginning of last year. They started to receive literally hundreds of letters and documents from parents basically saying, Congress says that there's a real problem here. Look at all this literature documenting the harmful effects of thimerosal. And the Special Counsel, Scott Block, from President's Office of Special Counsel, prepared this material saying that he used the technical legal jargon of that thimerosal poses a specific danger to public health, and he called upon Congress, both the Health Committee in the House and the Senate, to hold hearings on thimerosal and vaccines to investigate, as he said, this danger to public health. In addition, the Inspector General, about a month after that, wrote a letter saying that, again, based on these disclosures from the public, he found that there was a reasonable likelihood that there may be criminal activity on the part of people at FDA and CDC.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we're going to have to let our listeners, at least in the Great Northwest, go. If you have access to the shortwave or the Internet, why, you can listen to the second hour. But otherwise, of course, we want to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent on those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out 5 hours every day by radio 5 hours every day by internet, 5 hours every day by satellite, and 4 hours a day by shortwave, trying to educate the American people. Is like we like to say, this is the information you're not going to get from Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, or Brian Williams. This is the information the mainline media is not going to tell you. And what a unique opportunity we have, as you have had this first hour of our program this evening, to talk to a couple of people who are on the front lines, on the cutting edge of what's really going on. We have damaged and destroyed the minds of millions of American children. That's the reality of where we are today. And of course, this should be on the front pages of every newspaper. You should be here it discussed on all the talk programs. And, well, I'm sure that Dr. Geyer is getting on as many as he can, but it's so vitally important that you get the information. You get copies of these programs and circulate them, copy them. You have our permission to copy them and get the information out. And especially the parents of these autistic children, because there is hope for them, and hopefully as this whole scenario unfolds and there's more experience with the suppression of the testosterone level, and why we're going to be able to help the doctors and physicians and concerned people are going to be able to help a lot more. But at this point, I just simply want to mention to our listeners that we're going to be carrying this book, Evidence of Harm. We haven't, I just got it in, but we will be carrying it. Although certainly our exchange doesn't know about that in a few days, why we'll have that information. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on mercury. We have a video on mercury and some of the information you're going to need, and we're putting together a new four-tape set that'll give you the cutting-edge information. We are putting together a four-tape set on autism as well. You need to get the information. You need to get to your doctor, because most doctors are good and wonderful people, but they're not getting this from their medical journals. And as humiliating as it may be for a physician to have a patient come in and tell him something, some physicians will actually listen to you, and maybe just to humor you, they'd listen to tapes, programs like this or other programs, and hopefully they would begin to realize that they're not getting the truth from many of their medical journals. So you can, of course, reach us by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and our website is radioliberty.com. Dr. Geyer, do you have a website that people could go to?
They can contact us on our email at mgeier@comcast.net.
mgeier@comcast.net. And if you need information, Dr. Geyer, of course, he is working full-time on this. I don't know how you have time to do what you do, as well as practicing medicine and making a living. Are you getting any grants at all from any government agencies?
No, we're not supported at all, and we're not, you know, until we get into the treatment, even the people we're treating, we don't charge the patients for the treatment, but, you know, how could we not do this? How can we be Americans and live in this country, know what we know, and you know, this is not a small isolated thing now. This is a very large movement. This is something that you know, the gig is up, basically. The medical societies and the CDC are not going to be able to defend this anymore. This will come out in the wash. It's way beyond the point where they can sweep it under the rug anymore. We have numerous senators, U.S. senators, congressmen, people supporting this, and it will come out. And so, you know, since we happen to have been in the right place at the right time, we have no choice but to spend most of our time trying to help, eliminate or minimize the damage that was done.
Well, I really admire you and respect you for what you're doing. Will you be able to stay with us the next hour and we can take some calls?
Absolutely.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's so vitally important for our listeners to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the survival of America. Millions of American children have been damaged. Well, we'll be back in just a few moments to wrap up this program. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Now, this is certainly one of the most important issues before us right now. Why is it important? Well, first of all, because we're talking about millions of American children being damaged. Millions of American children being damaged. But the doctors have no idea what's going on. The doctors are solidly behind the vaccines. They could not believe that there would be people in the CDC who would be covering up something of this magnitude. And then, of course, people would say, well, what about our government? Certainly our congressmen and our senators wouldn't allow this to happen. And yet we've already heard that the Congressional Committee had come up with reports, but nothing really happened. In fact, what did happen was that when they put through the Office of Homeland Security legislation, they put on a rider so that you could not sue. Nobody would be able to sue Eli Lilly. Now, what did this have to do with Homeland Security? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. But they put it on in the middle of the night, and then, of course, when the information came out, I think it was Dick Armey who admitted that he had put that rider on, and I think it was perhaps it was Senator First. But Dick Armey had the integrity to quit. He was at the pinnacle of power, and he just left Congress. I think that he certainly realized that corruption was there, and I think somebody had leaned on him to do it, and but he got out of Congress. He wasn't defeated. He was the Speaker of the House, and he just left. But Senator First is still there, and he is, of course, the majority leader in the Senate. Was he the one who put that on, do you recall?
At times he tries to deny it, but he's the one that really put it on. And his excuse was that if we harm Eli Lilly, who's going to make the vaccines that protect us against terrorism? But the problem is, there are a lot of problems. First, that's not very fair. But secondly, Eli Lilly doesn't make vaccines. They haven't made vaccines since 1975. They sold their vaccine division in 75. What they did is they made thimerosal, the additive that caused the problems. So it's not even a sensical excuse.
And, you know, when I read that, of course, I realized that they were simply lying, that they knew that Eli Lilly didn't make vaccines, but that was the excuse they gave to the American people, because the American people didn't know that Eli Lilly didn't make vaccines. Well, who's going to protect us? Who's going to make those vaccines? And of course, Eli Lilly, as Dr. Kyra said, Eli Lilly didn't make vaccines, and they knew it. They made the thimerosal that created the problem, and they knew what problem it was, and they were going to cover for them. So their loyalty was not to the American people and not to the children, although, of course, they would never admit that. It was to the corporate a structure that seemed to be ones who deserve the loyalty rather than the American people who pay their salary. Well, you know, of course, fortunately, that was withdrawn. There was such an outcry from people across America. But I suspect they're going to try to get this same sort of thing through. They've done recent legislation. It passed just within the last 2 months, that now you can no longer have a class action suit in a state court. It has to go into a federal court where maybe it can be managed and won't be so disastrous for the corporations that are really responsible for what's happened. Have you had that thought?
Yeah, they've tried in various ways to protect the companies rather than the children. And, you know, the interesting thing is that the movement of autistic parents is not an anti-vaccine movement. And as you know, we're pro-vaccine, pro-good vaccine. And in addition, I don't think most of the parents want to destroy the vaccine industry either. They just want some justice, and they want that it not happen again in the future, and they want that those children that can be helped should be given all the help possible.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is this evening, Dr. Mark Geyer and David Geyer, and we're talking about this terrible tragedy where millions and millions of American children have been damaged. And now, of course, the whole incredible story is beginning to come out. There is a new book out. It's called Evidence of Harm. And, of course, we'll be interviewing the author of that in the very near future. And this is the story of course, the thimerosal and the government cover-up. And this is what's really so incredible, that this has been cover-up, cover-up. And even the Institute of Medicine, which met earlier several years ago, had simply lied. I know I've talked to Dr. Haley, Boyd Haley, who's professor of chemistry at the University of Kentucky, who testified before the Institute of Medicine, along with a number of other scientists, about the danger of mercury. And then the Institute of Medicine, totally ignoring the testimony, said there's no evidence that mercury is harmful. How could they come up with such a ridiculous statement?
Well, we've read some of their early... they also kept transcripts before they heard the evidence. And their view is that if they said that there was evidence of harm, then that would destroy the vaccine program. And so they would have to be convinced that the harm was more did more harm than the vaccines did good. That's not what they were asked to do. They were asked to determine whether or not there was harm from the thimerosal, and they clearly did not do their job. In addition, in their defense, they were fooled because they relied on National Immunization Program studies, which are the only ones really that exist on the other side. And as we mentioned before, this year's IOM has declared that their studies are suspect, that they have manipulated the data, withheld the data, and as we mentioned before, they've been fired. Okay, if you want to read their version, they would say they've been reorganized and they've removed the safety responsibility elsewhere, which is a good idea, but in reality, they've been fired. So, you know, the Institute of Medicine that really was sort of rigged also was fooled themselves. They thought at least the studies that were on the side that there was no effect were legitimate studies, and they weren't legitimate studies. They were highly manipulated studies, and now at least the scientific world that cares to read the Institute of Medicine's recent report now knows this to be the fact.
Now, where would that report be available?
It's available on the IOM website. If you go to www.iom.edu, you can view it online.
And how big a report is it? Some of these reports are phenomenal.
It's 200 or 300 pages.
All right, well, that's all right. My computer will handle that. And we get an awful lot of these large reports, but I find many times it's, you know, it's better if you read the thing yourself, and then you can discuss it intelligently. And I think it's so vitally important that people get the facts, or at least get access to the facts, because children's lives are at stake today.
We testified at both the 2004 and the 2005 IOM.
All right, fine. Well, now Dr. Geyer is saying that they testified at both of the IOM meetings, the Institute of Medicine meetings. When was the earlier one?
The earlier one was held in February of 2004,
okay.
And the second one was held in the summer of 2004, and the report just came out in February of 2005, and that one really was about data manipulation and access for independent researchers, and we're the only researchers ever to have seen that database, so we had a big role in it. And when the report came out, they recommended that all independent researchers have free access to the database, and although we've seen it, and we've even, as I mentioned, recently published from it, they're still hiding most of that data. And one of the ways they did it is we want to see the data from beyond the year 2000, which is the data after the withdrawal of some of the thimerosal. And what they did is they don't have the data anymore at CDC. They paid a private company $180 million. This is from Dr. Weldon of Florida, the congressman. He has the contract. So that they would keep the data in such a way that no private person would ever see it. Can you imagine $180 million of our tax money to keep a database so that nobody can see it?
And, of course, what this really, I think this is almost criminal activity. What they're doing is trying to conceal the truth from the American people. Were you ever able to get any information out of that?
Well, we're still working on it today. Am I naive and you know, feeling that will not hold, especially since they've been removed and fired? Eventually, we will penetrate through that, and we'll get that company to allow independent researchers ourselves and anybody else who wants to look at it to look at the data. But right now, that data is forbidden from anybody.
No. How were you able to get into the CDC database? Because I know they didn't want you in there. They didn't want you uncovering what was going on. How did you get in there?
Well, we were able to get in there because we had tremendous help from Congress. We initially applied, and CDC sort of brushed us off like we were flies or something. And we were persistent. We didn't go away. And eventually we were able to enlist congressional help. And it got down to a point where on a weekly basis we were having conference calls between us, CDC, and representatives from several congressional offices. It was only with that kind of pressure that the CDC was finally forced to relent and give us something to look at.
Well, of course, this is the public record. I mean, how can they suppress the information on health issues? This certainly has nothing to do with Osama bin Laden. This has nothing to do with national security. This has to do with the safety of the vaccines that are responsible for destroying the lives of millions of American children.
They try to suppress it in a number of ways. One is they say that if you look at it, you risk patient confidentiality. But the problem with saying that is that the database doesn't have, at least the public one that they showed us, the one that they prepared for us, has no names, addresses, phone numbers, or locations of the patients. So there's really no patient confidentiality. And the other thing they try to say to the Institute of Medicine was that, you know, if private people see this, they're going to scare parents and the parents won't take the vaccines. None of this holds. Now, they let us look at it a little bit of it, but they gave us monitors, you know, like with some kind of Iraqi, war criminals. They sat there and they watched us. And when we get data printed out, they took the data and threw it away. They whited it out. They interfered in every way possible. We got so upset that we called Dr. Weldon, the congressman from Florida, who's one of the people that was helping us. And, you know, we were in Maryland, and so it was only about 40 minutes from the Capitol. He said he would come out personally and help us. They said they would not allow him in the door, that the guards would stop him. A U.S. congressman on the committee that has oversight, because after all, he wasn't cleared for patient confidentiality. Can you imagine that? A physician and a person oversight, the guards were not going to let him go in the building.
So what happened?
Well, he didn't go, and, you know, they eventually threw us out, and then we went through a whole big process of getting back in, but they don't make the data sets the way we ask, and they hide pieces, and they cut it up, and they scramble it, and they interfere in every way possible. They don't turn on the computer correctly. We can't take out results. We're still in the middle of this fight, and we hired an independent consultant, a professor, George Washington, who's an epidemiologist, so they couldn't say that we didn't have a board-certified epidemiologist with us. And, you know, he thought, oh, I'll go down there, and there'll be no problem. Of course, the first thing they told him was, you can't see the data. So we're still in the middle of this fight, even though those who oppose us from the NIP have been fired. The roadblocks are still there, and the story is still ongoing. We hope to be able to tell you eventually that we have complete full access, but we've now been working on this for 2.5 years. We've filed thousands of pages of trying to, you know, satisfy what they want, and basically, we're not in where we should be still.
Well, now, what about Dr. Geberding, Judy Geberding? This is her baby now. She's fired all the other people. The buck stops with her. Is she going to continue trying to keep you from getting the truth?
Well, you know, we'd like to give everybody a chance. And since she's just done this in the last few weeks, we hope that she'll be more reasonable. But she has a big problem. I don't think she's really prepared to do this kind of thing. She's a physician. And I'm not sure that she even knows how to utilize the database. I'm not trying to say this to degrade her, but I suspect that she couldn't make it happen if she wanted to.
Well, I know, but, I mean, she could just give you access to it, and if they get out of your way, you could figure out
we know how to make it work. We've spent years now, at least the one thing we've learned is how to use their SAS system, how to write programs, how to do the investigation. But, see, her position would be that the data that we want no longer belongs to her. It belongs to the private company under this contract, and the private company says if they give us the data, they lose $180 million.
Well, I would simply bring a suit against them. Of course, you don't have the facilities to do that, but Congress is going to have to intervene. And fortunately, Dr. David Weldon, Congressman Weldon, certainly seems to be dedicated to trying to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, and we have other supporters, too. I mean, Burton has helped us, and we've got Maloney, and there's quite a few, actually, both, state senators, national senators, and I think a suit may well be brought as well. I'm not a lawyer, but I think that we may have to be part of a suit to get force access.
But, of course, why in heaven's name would they pay a private company $180 million to conceal the truth from people who wanted to find out to save the lives of children?
Well, their view is that if parents knew about it, they wouldn't take the vaccines and they'd all die of infectious disease. And I don't mean to belittle it. I mean, we think vaccines do help against infectious disease, but you got to tell the truth. You can't you can't get people to do what you want and have informed consent and work in medicine in this century by making up stuff that, that favors what you want to see. It has to be the truth, and they're not, they haven't got on board yet with the idea that they have to be transparent and tell the truth.
Well, you know, it almost sounds like sort of a Hollywood thriller, you know. This doesn't really happen in real life. I mean, people wouldn't conceal the fact that the lives of millions of Americans were being destroyed, that there was treatment available for these poor, unfortunate kids, and everything was being done to discourage that treatment. You know, in the real world, this doesn't happen. Only the trouble is, this is the real world. Don't you sometimes sort of want to shake yourself and say, how could this be happening?
You know, what I really like to do is to wake up tomorrow morning and think there was it all a dream and it never happened. Unfortunately, sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction, and it really did happen.
Well, I'll never forget, of course, when I was involved with the battle on AIDS, and I led the battle in California to try to address the AIDS epidemic as a public health issue rather than a civil rights issue, and I went back to the CDC. And after 3 days there, you know, I'm meeting some of these key people at the CDC that were dealing with this problem, and the only one who was really honest with me was Jim Curran, who was in charge, who said, sure, I know what needs to be done, but I'm trapped by the politicians. What am I going to do? I got, you know, Congressman Waxman on one side and Congressman Dannemeyer on the other side, and I'm caught in the middle. What should I do? And he's looking over at me, and I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I said, well, you do what's right. And, of course, he did what's right. He quit. And went to work as a charge of public health, I think, at Emory University. I don't know if he's still there or not, but the rest of the people there at CDC, they weren't on the same side I was on, and they were certainly weren't on the same side Jim Curran was on. I thought they were part of the problem, not part of the solution. So I could certainly sympathize with the frustration, this feeling of frustration you must have had when you were going there. Except it sounds like you had a far worse time than I did.
Well, it's certainly something that just, it's amazing that it won't go away, that every time we think we're going to make some progress forward, that something looks like it's going to open up, people at CDC manage to step in, and they do it in such creative ways. You wouldn't think people could stop people from accessing. Just give you an idea of what's going on. What CDC always says is they're not hindering anybody to seeing the data. What they say is that it's the HMOs that participate in the VSD database that have concerns about external researchers. So what CDC does to sort of fuel that fire is they keep alleging that external researchers somehow are trying to violate patient confidentiality in the VSD database. And to show you how ridiculous that is, the database that's been assembled for us and just in general for external researchers has no names, addresses, phone numbers, zip codes. We can't even tell which HMO the patients are from. But CDC constantly, without telling us that there's even a problem, sends off a letter to the HMO saying, you know, we looked at what the Geyers are trying to do in the VSD database, and there's some possibility, could be one in a trillion chance, but there's some possibility it might risk the patient confidentiality of the members. And the HMOs, when they hear that, turn around and say, well, you know, we can't have that. We have to protect our patients. That's number one priority. And so we have to keep explaining over and over and over again to these HMOs that there shouldn't be any concern at all.
And the most recent is we've yelled and screamed so much about that, now they have a new idea. We're not risking potentially the patient confidentiality. We're risking the HMO confidentiality. We might figure out how it is that they practice medicine, so we might take their patients away. You know, I mean, we're going in at the request of a congressional committee. We're the investigators, not the investigatees. How dare they imply that we would do any of that even if we could, which, of course, we couldn't possibly do anyway.
Well, I think everything is just to put as many barriers in the way as they possibly can to keep you from coming up with the information you've come up with. And it's beginning to get out now, and I'm really so pleased that this new book, Evidence of Harm, is out. And well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there across America, give us a call. Let me tell you, this is one of the greatest human tragedies of all time. Millions of American children's lives have been destroyed. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest this evening is David and Mark Geyer, and we're talking about the mercury cover-up. It really is, in many respects, a deception, an organized effort to keep the American people from learning the truth about the harm that has been done by thimerosal. Now, of course, the logical thing would have been, as soon as they found out that thimerosal was harmful, to get it out of all vaccines, to recall the vaccines that had it in it, and to do what was right. Now, I understand that this meeting that was held, this secret meeting in Georgia there, back, what was it, about 2000, or 2001, where they had 55 people, that they actually recognized the danger of thimerosal and decided just to leave the thimerosal into the vaccines until all of it had been used up. Was that the basic theme of that meeting?
Beyond that, they put new vaccines out that they didn't just use it up. They put it in and they allowed the introduction of the influenza vaccine. And incidentally, they didn't just know it since 1999. You may have read in the LA Times, they published a Merck memo from 1991, where Merck knew that they were 87 times, according to their numbers, they calculated, 87 times over the recommended safety levels of mercury in the vaccines. And basically what they said in their memo was the Scandinavian countries are no longer going to allow this, and they're going to have to make vaccines without it, but the Americans don't seem to care. That was in the LA Times on the front page, actually.
And of course that was Dr. Hilleman. In fact, I just read today that he just passed away. He was sort of the dean of vaccinologists, or one of them, had worked for Merck for many, many years, and certainly he was the one who was concerned. Wasn't he actually the one who sent that email to the administration at Merck, talking about the 87 times the maximum allowable amount of mercury that we're giving to these children with the hepatitis B vaccine, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. It was Dr. Hilleman. He was in charge, he was assigned by Merck to form a task force on thimerosal. It had become such a problem. And the task force was designed to sort of evaluate how much mercury was in vaccines, what the world situation was, you know, which countries were objecting to it, and what potential solutions were. And what they discovered was, when you added up the amount of mercury children were getting in the U.S. from the DPTs, the HIVs, and the hepatitis Bs, they were 87 times over the Swedish limit, which actually is now, that limit that he was comparing it to is 10 times higher than the current limit for mercury in the United States. Yet the children were still 87 times over. And then in the discussion part it said Scandinavian countries, Japan, several other countries, were no longer willing to tolerate that overage over the limit. And it mentions that the FDA didn't have that problem with mercury and vaccines in the U.S.
If they had listened in 91, there would have never been an epidemic. That's when the epidemic began.
And, of course, it wasn't that when Sweden took it out of the thimerosal out of their vaccines?
Within a couple of years, they got it out of theirs. That's right.
So this certainly, other countries knew exactly what was happening, and they got out. Now, do most European countries have removed the thimerosal from their vaccines, or is it, you mentioned England, but what about the continental?
Well, a particularly interesting one is France. And the reason it's particularly interesting is that Adventist Pasteur, because we lost half of our influenza vaccine this year, Adventist Pasteur became the only producer of U.S. Influenza vaccine, and their vaccine contains thimerosal.
Hold that thought here for just a moment, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, we're talking with Dr. Mark Geyer and David Geyer, and they were just saying that when the English influenza vaccine was found to be contaminated, the only influenza vaccine that was available was a French vaccine that contained thimerosal. So pick up the story from there.
So when California was considering banning thimerosal, which, as you know, they eventually did, Adventist Pasteur sent people to say that it was absolutely safe for the children in California. And so, you know, our answer was, is that so? You know, your headquarters are in France. The vaccine you're giving us for our children is illegal in your country. How dare you give us the bad vaccine when you can't even make it in your own country? So, yes, France has banned it, but I find it particularly ironic that France, who makes the thimerosal-containing vaccine for our children goes around saying how safe it is, cannot use that vaccine in their own country. Basically, they're dumping their junk on America. I didn't know we were a third-world dumping ground, but apparently that's their view of us.
Well, now, what happened? Because we had the law passed, and I know that Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Governor Schwarzenegger, had passed the law saying that you couldn't have mercury-containing vaccines in California. When does that law go into effect, or was it in effect, and they just violated it? What happened?
That law goes into effect in July of 2006. So it's basically a year from now is when that will be law in California.
And the interesting thing is it's being violated already because there are some vials of vaccine that are going into California that have expiration dates beyond July of 2006. So unless they think they're going to go and get them all back before the law goes into effect, those are on the shelf ready to be used beyond time when they're legal in California.
Now, what sort of vaccines are they? Are they influenza? Are they some other childhood vaccine?
The vaccines, it's things like tetanus vaccine, meningitis vaccine, JVAX. There are several different types. Some types of DT vaccine.
Now, that's a diphtheria tetanus vaccine. DT. Okay, go ahead. So, but certainly adults get mercury toxicity as well. Certainly, you know, that Dr. Haley's expressed his real concern, and for those people who don't know out in the listening audience, Dr. Haley is professor of chemistry at the University of Kentucky, chairman of the department there, and he's shown his concern about mercury and the part that mercury intoxication plays in Alzheimer's disease in older people.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that the thimerosal and mercury is very bad for older people, for any people, and in fact, those of us that get a single influenza vaccine, that puts us well over the limit. The simple way to calculate the limit of mercury is you're allowed to have 0.1 micrograms of mercury per day per kilogram of body weight. The only complicating factor is Americans don't like kilogram, but let's say that you're an average weight female. So you weigh, let's say, I don't mean to insult any females out in your audience, but let's say you weigh 70 kilos, it's about 154 pounds. So you're allowed 0.1 microgram per kilogram, that's 70 times 0.1, that's 7 micrograms. And the influenza shot contains 25. So you're 3.5 times over, and there are numerous cases that you don't become autistic, but there are numerous cases now where people within a few days start getting dizzy, they don't remember very well, they get muscle aches, they have permanent damage and they lose IQ. They have various other neurological sequelae from this.
And aren't some people a lot more sensitive to mercury than others are?
That's absolutely
true. That's absolutely true. And we've done some very interesting work where you can identify there are actually certain genotypes or genetic makeups where it seems to be true. And what we see is that the body is very interesting when it comes to mercury. Mercury is a toxin very unlike many of the common poisons humans are exposed to. As an example, if you're exposed to something like benzene, which is very toxic, that's a compound that can be broken down by the liver. It gets broken down into CO2 and water. Mercury is such an interesting poison because it's an element. You can, you know, in the case of thimerosal, that's ethyl mercury. Maybe you can remove the ethyl groups, or in the case of methyl mercury, you can remove the methyl. But the mercury part, you can't break down. The only way in which the body can remove mercury is that you have to excrete it. And one of the crucial molecules that's involved in secreting mercury is glutathione.
Okay, well, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two, and of course, when we do, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment. This is such an important subject, and you need to understand that we're talking about the destruction of the lives of millions of American children. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And what a unique opportunity to talk to a couple of people who are on the front lines of this amazing story, of this amazing battle. Because believe me, these are the children of our next generation whose lives are being systematically destroyed. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course we were just talking about, we've got Jim calling from Iowa, and so let's go to Jim. Hi, Jim, do you have a question or comment?
Thank you.
Just speak up, please.
I'm sorry. Thank you for your topic tonight. I have a question. I've got some children that, our oldest is almost 15 and falls kind of in a range that you've talked about for when this thimerosal started being used in vaccines.
Right.
What things should parents be looking for problems that may have occurred due to the mercury in the vaccinations that were given to their children?
Do you have any comment on that, Dr. Mark or David?
Well, the obvious things are things like either neurodevelopmental disorders, attention deficit disorders, speech disorders, language disorders, all sorts of disorders like that. Those are the obvious ones. The ones you can't look for, that we don't know how to evaluate, but that are at risk, is all of our children at risk, because thimerosal is a known carcinogen. So there's a significant possibility that even those who are not obviously affected will, in subsequent years, have a higher rate of cancer. It's very hard to study this, but everybody who's ever looked at thimerosal knows that it causes cancer any way you want to look at it. So there's some obvious effects, and then there's some subtle long-term effects. And then, as you mentioned, Dr. Haley thinks, and I think he's probably right, that it also may increase their chances of developing Alzheimer's or ALS or some other chronic disorders that are, again, hard to put your hand on because, you know, we're talking about 60 years from now.
Jim, is your son doing well? Is he a good student? Is he intelligent and bright?
Well, we homeschool, and so we do think that he is. We have stopped vaccinating for a number of years now, and I'm wondering if there are things that we can do to mitigate any mercury toxicity that may have already been there. Is there something we can do in now that it's been a number of years since exposure?
Well, how long has it been since you had any exposure?
Oh, I suppose it's been 6 or 7 years.
Do you have any thoughts at all on that?
Yes, I think that if he's normal, I mean, we thank God, but there are some additives.
Well, I was just going to mention, what I would advise is you really want to be careful and avoid mercury as much as possible, whether it's from fish or living next to a power plant that's spewing out mercury vapor. The most recent study that just came out about thimerosal, it's going to actually be out by the end of this week, is that thimerosal, when you get exposed to it, puts a significant amount of mercury in the brain.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have Jim calling us from Iowa. Of course, Jim homeschooling, and there he has a 15-year-old boy who seems to be doing quite well. Hasn't had any vaccinations for 8 years. And of course, Jim asked the question: is there anything we ought to do to get rid of the mercury that he would have gotten from his early childhood vaccines? And of course, it was David who was commenting that certainly you want to avoid any contact with emissions and mercury emissions from factories and things of that sort. Please go ahead and pick up the story from there.
So what's just coming out is that it's been found that mercury from thimerosal goes and deposits in tissues like the brain, and unfortunately it breaks down into inorganic mercury. And what this new study shows is that it doesn't leave. It doesn't seem to have any half-life at all. And the author of this study, or the researchers in the study, suggest that it may actually stay for many, many years in the brain. So one of the things that's sort of non-harmful, chelation's kind of tricky business that we mentioned before. There are supplements that help make this substance called glutathione that I was mentioning. Glutathione is integral in the body's ability to excrete mercury. So, as an example, a compound called N-acetylcysteine, or NAC is the acronym, that's a compound that, if you take that orally, it helps to go in your body and it'll help your cells make more glutathione, which may help them to excrete mercury outside the body.
And you can get that at a health food type store. See, we would be afraid to recommend something drastic like chelation unless the child, you know, was affected. If he's not affected, we want it to be something that's absolutely safe and harmless. And so taking one of these supplements, like he said, like NAC, should be absolutely safe, and it might help eliminate some of the mercury. And of course, as David said, avoid sources of mercury. And one of the sources we overlook is dental amalgam. Nobody should place a dental amalgam in their mouth. If you have a cavity, you should have it filled with a composite, because those silver fillings in your mouth, those aren't silver, you know. Those are mercury.
Amen to that. Okay, Jim, anything else, Jim?
No, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you so much. And let's now, I'm going to push a button here, and I hope I don't lose David. If I do, why, I will call you right back. Let's go to Mike. Yeah, I guess we didn't. We call Mike calling from Orange County. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you guys tonight?
Doing fine. Good to hear from you.
Reception's kind of poor tonight, but...
You're listening on shortwave?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we can't do anything about that. You're going to have to talk to the Lord about that.
Yeah, it's just conditions. Well, it's called about, I just finished reading a book by Dr. Sherry Rogers called Detoxify or Die.
Right.
And she goes into this real heavily with the mercury. By the way, she recommends the same thing with the glutathione and the other substance there. But she mentions in there she's having really good resolve with patients using this new infrared, what's called a far infrared sauna.
Yeah, it's just basically to try to sort of sweat the mercury out. Do you know anything at all about that, Dr. Geyer?
No, I have no knowledge of that at all.
Yeah, but that certainly, there are a number of things that are being used by the doctors who are treating a lot of autistic patients along that line.
Said she's getting four times the amount of mercury coming out in your sweat than you can get in your urine.
Right, and I'm sure that should be, I've heard very good things about that. Okay,
that's
anything else, Mike?
No, that's it.
Thanks so much.
Keep up the good work.
All right, bye-bye. Let's go to Mike, let's go to Jeanette, who's calling from Watsonville. Let's see. Jeanette, hi, how are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Doing fine. Do you have a question?
Well, I do. I have mercury toxicity, and about how many people do you think are suffering with this, or have this, or
how do you know you have mercury toxicity?
I was tested by a homeopathic person, and I'm taking a glutathione. Yeah.
All right, fine.
Well, he said through my test he can see that toxicity in the brain.
Okay. How frequently is this in the general population?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we think in children, we think that we've this whole generation has been exposed. In adults, I think that every one of us living over the mercury limit. We've done these calculations, and the average person with their average diet and their breathing and the average number of amalgams is living over what the safety limit is. That doesn't mean that we're all, you know, drastically damaged, but I think that we have to understand that the rest of our lives are going to be spent in an environment that's over the limit. You can remove the thimerosal from the vaccine. That's easy. You can do it quickly if they were cooperative. But to remove it from the fish, to remove it from the factories, to remove it from our streams, it's going to take generations. So we're all living over, and I think the best thing to do is to take some supplements and to minimize your exposure as much as you can. And that some people who are sensitive, unfortunately, are going to suffer. And it sounds like you're one of them, and it sounds like you're having at least some attempt to ameliorate it.
Okay, anything else?
Yeah, I finally found someone who can help me.
Okay.
I mean, I knew that there was, I've had different symptoms of different things, and I think this is the reason why.
Okay, well, God bless, and thanks.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you, Jeanette.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Jeanette calling.
Well, let's see. All right, fine. Well,
we'll be having a call. Dr. Guy, are you there?
Yes.
All right, fine. Hopefully we're getting some static, but it seems to have gone away. All right, fine. Well, now, as far as the things you're talking about, and as far as this, the real problem as far as these children are concerned, how are we going to get the parents to get their children into treatment? Because so much, the general medical profession is discouraging treatment for this condition, and certainly the media is discouraging treatment, and yet these children, so many of them can be helped. How are we going to reach the parents and get them to know that there is something that can be done for their children?
Well, I think the worm is turning. I think that with the book and with IMUS in the Morning, with shows like yours, I think the word is getting out considerably more. In fact, it's becoming something that people at least have some awareness of it. I was watching a television program the other day, and it was a police show, and one of the policemen offered the other one sushi, and the guy who was offered said, gee, if I wanted mercury, I'd eat a thermometer. I mean, it's getting out. People are starting to realize that there is a major problem with mercury, and basically, I believe, as you do, because I'm a practicing physician, that you know, the doctors want to help. And if you can find a pediatrician or a doctor that wants to help and doesn't know how to help, there are training sessions by the DAN doctors, the Feed Autism Now, and they have meetings two, three times a year where they get together and they tell you everything that they know, and they'll give you the protocols and their training. And so we need to build up more doctors that are willing and know something about treating this, because the demand is going to go way up. I mean, it's now reached all the different states. It's you know, coming out in the press, and doctors really now need to start learning to how to help these patients.
We seem to be having a problem here with our lines. Let's wait a moment or two, Matt. Otherwise, we may have to call you back. All right, fine. Well, of course, now, is that up on the Internet? How would people get in touch with the DAN doctors?
He's looking on our computer to see if we can find their site to give you. But if you just search the term Defeat Autism Now, DAN, that you'll get their site.
All right.
They have meetings. They have meetings all over the place. I think they're having one in Boston coming up next week.
And I think that really what's so significant is the fact that there are doctors now that are taking this on. This is especially why, because they've got potentially millions of patients out there that need help, and it's just not available through the regular channels. Certainly, they're trying to get them into speech therapy. They're trying to get them into behavioral modification, but that's not what they need. They need to get rid of that mercury. Well, let's go. We've got John calling from Las Vegas. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Good. Very well. I'd like to ask your guest a question about if you've had flu shots in the past.
Talking about influenza shots.
Influenza, yeah. What kind of increased likelihood would you have, and at what point I haven't had a flu shot. I haven't been stupid enough to take one since probably 1998. But I probably had three or four over the course of my life. So what kind of likelihood is that to increase Alzheimer? And would you be able to chelate that with the supplement NAC? And could you spell the name of that NAC for me?
All right. First of all, what should the average individual, should they think about chelation if they're not really having any symptoms? And what is this NAC?
I don't think you really want to chelate somebody again that's healthy and doing fine. That's not advisable.
Right.
I think that supplements are the way to go if you want to try to help self-chelate some. And the one I mentioned, NAC, that's N-acetyl, that's A-C-Y-T-E-L, cysteine, which is C-Y-S-T-E-I-N-E. And, what's important about that one, if you go into your local health food store or pharmacy and you see on the shelf something called L-cysteine or L-cysteine, that's C-Y-S-T-I-N-E, you don't want to get that. Unfortunately, the body's kind of tricky about ways to get various amino acids in, and the NAC product is much, much better at getting into you, going through the stomach and getting in a position to be able to go into your cells and produce glutathione.
And of course, what we want to produce is glutathione, and they also sell glutathione, but unfortunately, glutathione, if you take it, doesn't get into the cells. So the only thing that, the thing that gets in best that makes glutathione turn on is the N-acetyl cysteine.
Okay, I hope that answers your question, John.
Yes, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, in fact, the last thing you want to do certainly is
go ahead and,
treat if you're doing fine. But I would suggest that we do not take any. I don't take my influenza shots. I've never taken one. I'm 76. I'm healthy, and certainly I'm very, very concerned about the other things that are in the influenza. What vaccine? What about the aluminum, the alum that they put in there? Does that have any impact on the mercury, or does that perhaps help to transport the mercury into the brain, or vice versa? Do we know anything at all about the effect of the aluminum in the vaccines?
Well, aluminum has a nasty property that it likes to react with thimerosal. If you look in the material safety data sheet for thimerosal, it actually explicitly says not to mix aluminum with thimerosal because they'll react and produce burning kind of reactions. And it was actually been shown that some people who are undergoing surgery, they used to paint thimerosal maybe on the surgical wound that was made, and if you happen to lie or get on a bed that had some aluminum rails or aluminum inside the actual like a heating pad or something, that there were actually really nasty burns that could happen. And so it specifically warns not to expose thimerosal with aluminum.
But isn't there an alum in the influenza vaccine? Because alum is used in most vaccines as an adjuvant. In other words, something to boost the immune response. Isn't there an alum in the influenza as well as the thimerosal?
Not in influenza, but in many of the vaccines. And as you were saying, it's an adjuvant, meaning that they use less of the antigen. The antigen is the thing that your body's trying to make the antibodies against to prevent you coming down with that disease. But the manufacturers don't want to spend a lot of money giving you a whole lot of antigen because that's very expensive. So they come and they give you a little bit of antigen and a whole lot of aluminum to cause your immune system to be stimulated and to make a much larger response than normal.
But they don't have the alum then in the influenza vaccine?
It's not influenza. But see, the problem with, when you have aluminum in vaccines is it not only makes your immune system respond to the antigen in the vaccine, but it responds to any other antigen around. And in fact, the biggest problem with aluminum, I think aluminum, the alum should be removed from vaccines, but you can't remove them right away because if you remove them and you just add some more antigen, you'd have to redo the trials. I don't know exactly how much antigen you have to use, but this problem came to light really in France. In the United States, we give hepatitis B shots to our infants, which in some ways doesn't make sense because hepatitis B is a disease of, homosexuals, drug users, sexually active people. It makes sense to protect older people. So in the United States, we give it to our infants, and then we give it to high-risk people. We try to give it to prostitutes and drug users because they don't take it. So the other high-risk people that take it are the doctors and the dentists and people that, have a risk of being exposed. In France, they used a different idea. They gave it to all the adults. And when they started giving it to all the adults, they ended up with a very large epidemic of autoimmune diseases. They went up through the roof, and in fact, France withdrew that vaccine, and they don't give it anymore. And they had a lot of problems with the aluminum in it. And it's similar to the same vaccine we use here. It's just that it's difficult to see the problems in the children because they're taking all kinds of other vaccines at the same time. And the adults, we see the problems in some of the adults here, but we don't give it to a large number of adults in our country. And in fact, France is now having a criminal investigation into the damage that was done by their aluminum-containing hepatitis B vaccine.
And, of course, what it really seems like they do is they experiment on the populations. In other words, instead of working them up thoroughly and making sure over a long period of time, they just sort of rush them right onto the market and then wait to see what happens. Do you ever have that feeling?
One of the most amazing experiments now is the influenza vaccine. The current recommendation is that you take, that we give it to our children in the first year of life, and that you have to then take it every year for the rest of your life. So the average female born now lives 79 or 80 years. So if you follow the recommendation, they would have 80 flu shots. Well, we all know that if you keep giving a similar shot over and over again, you increase the chances of having anaphylaxis or having some kind of autoimmune disease. And so I've asked them where their data is that shows that it's safe to take 80 in a row. And, of course, the truth of the matter is nobody has experience with more than 5 or 6 shots in a row. And they're just experimenting. They hope it doesn't cause any harm. I hope it doesn't cause any harm, but I think it's very high risk, and I think they really need to tell the people that if you do what we recommend, you've done something that no one else has done before you.
But they're not supposed to experiment on the American people. And if it is an experiment, they should let them know. Isn't there something called informed consent, or is the government immune from that?
It's beyond informed consent. There's something called the Geneva Convention, which says that if you experiment on people, you have to let them know that they have a choice, and you have to obtain informed consent. And they're not doing it in many places. And in fact, they're moving to require vaccination. The problem with influenza in adults is they can't make you take it because, you know, for kids they make you take it because they make it hard for you to go to school. So we've seen some memos where they're talking about not renewing your driver's license if your influenza is not up to date. I mean, they don't want this to be a choice. They want to force these things, and it has to be a choice.
Well, I think, of course, what we've seen as far as the integrity of the government and as far as their effort to protect our health, I think that we really need to get independent people in there looking at all these statistics to make sure that they're not covering something up. And I am just hoping and praying that with the new book out and with the information you're getting out and other people are getting out, that the American people are going to begin to understand that, of course, they've been used as guinea pigs, and, of course, some people have been given a fatal disease. We're going to be back in just a minute to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. The 2 hours has just rushed by. We've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What's the final message you'd like to leave with our listeners tonight?
The government has to be transparent. They have to tell us the truth. They can't bend the truth. If they think something's good for us, they can tell us that they think it's good for us, but they can't make up lies to make us take it. It has to be informed consent. They have to take into account, primarily, they work for us. They don't work for themselves. They don't work for these drug companies. The number one, two, and three imperatives have to be us, and that's not happening.
And I think, of course, the other thing is the people have a right to know, and the people have a right to say no. In other words, the people have a right to decline vaccinations. They're always talking about herd immunity and what's good for the masses, but I think the individual has to look after themselves and their family. Would you agree with that?
I would agree, and if you did that, you would use. Then they would have to make a better product if they had to worry about getting people to take it. And by the way, 19 states in the United States now do allow you to decline if you don't believe in it, and the number of other states are proposing, allowing this. And it's not that I think that people shouldn't take any vaccines, but I think that it has to be your choice. You have to make an informed consent. And informed consent does not mean that they're going to, you know, arrest you for not taking care of your children. That's not informed consent. Informed consent implies that you have a choice. You're given the full information and you have a choice. Presumably, if they make good vaccines and they help you, most or all the people are going to choose to take them. But to force people to take them and to lie to have you take them is absolutely unacceptable.
Well, you know, of course, initially when we came out, when I was practicing medicine, why we had, you know, DPT, and we had, that was really about the only thing we had, and we got a toxoid booster, and then, of course, we come down with vaccine after vaccine after vaccine. So that now, of course, these children are getting, 30 or 40 vaccination shots, and with each one, of course, you boost the immune system with the alum and the aluminum in there, and don't you think we're going to be seeing a lot more autoimmune disease because of the frequency of the shots we're giving our children?
I think we are, and I would like to investigate that in the database. That's, there's so much proof now that thimerosal caused the epidemic of neurodevelopmental disorders that I'd like to study that too, but I'd like to study something I know less about. And if we could get into their secret database, we would be able to answer your question as to what diseases are going up with the vaccines and which ones are going down. And we very much have proposals, and we very much need to be supported. We and others, independent people, need to go in and actually get the truth out about this.
Well, we're out of time, but I really want to thank you so very much. And if people want to get in touch with you, again, what is your email?
mgeier, M-G-E-I-E-R, at Comcast, comcast.net.
All right, fine. God bless you both. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you enjoyed the program this evening, because that was really one of the most amazing programs I've done in a long period of time. And when you realize the implications that there are treatment for these children, we're talking about millions of American children being harmed. And of course, we have people in the CDC who knew they were harming them, and did everything they could to conceal the truth. If you wanted to destroy an eight great nation, do you know a better way to do it than has been done? Now we can only question the motives of the people, but these people should be fired. I think they should be held up, you know, to ridicule. I personally believe that they should be, they have betrayed their oath as physicians by intentionally harming children. Millions of American children have been harmed. And all that's happened is the people have been transferred to another division, and they'll be allowed, of course, eventually to retire with their fancy government pensions. And of course, children's lives have been destroyed. Parents' lives have been destroyed. And of course, the financial burden is beginning to wreak tremendous havoc on our economic system, on our healthcare delivery system, and on the requirement for therapy and other things for these unfortunate children who probably could be helped. All we have to do, of course, is get them into treatment, because I think increasingly treatment is available, but everything has been done to suppress the fact that these children are victims of the vaccine program. They're victims, of course, of the Centers for Disease Control, the National Institute of Health, and the U.S. Public Health Service. And they've known for a long time what's going on, and they've kept it a secret. So I hope many of you out there want to get copies of this 2 hours of our program and get it to your doctor, get it to parents who have autistic children. There is a great deal of hope. And so don't get discouraged. Help us to get the truth out across America. And one thing you have to understand is you can never trust government. Thomas Paine said it best. He said government at its best is a necessary evil. And I think that this is exactly where we are today. All societies are good, but government at its best is a necessary evil. So, and we can't give these people power over our lives. The whole idea of the CDC, the NIH, the U.S. Public Health Service are all unconstitutional. Let's get back to our Constitution. Let's protect our children. Well, if you'd like to get our 4 tape set on Mercury, if you'd like to get the video we have on Mercury, they're available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We do hope to be carrying the book, Evidence of Harm, and we'll be, just got our copy in today. In fact, I went out and bought one, and now we've got another one. And of course, these will be available through Radio Liberty. We want you to get the information. We want you to get your doctor. We want to get to your friends. And we want to expose one of the greatest covers up of modern time that has destroyed the lives of millions of American children. This is the great tragedy. So remember again, if you'd like to get the 4 tape set of the video we have on Mercury, and we're coming up with a new 4 tape set, but I really think this 2-hour program tonight is one of the finest programs we've done in a long period of time. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you'd like a free copy of our one of our newsletters, I suggest last November, that goes into water fluoridation and how they're poisoning our children with a water fluoridation program. And you say that couldn't be true, because if it is, why our government wouldn't be doing that? Well, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Ask for the November newsletter or go to our website at radioliberty.com and pull down the newsletter and make copies of it, distribute it. Help us to get the truth out. Because remember, next time it could be one of your children or your grandchildren. And so pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.